Good morning. Today is Thursday, 4th of November 2021. I am Lynn Sturm, and I have been given the privilege of interviewing Gary Baines of Clive. I hand it over to you now.
Thank you, Lynn. My name is Gary Andrew Baines, and I was born on Wednesday, the 20th of May 1942. I'm the second son of Arlene, we always call Mum Claude, and George Baines. And I've got a brother, Ted, and a sister, Sue. My grandparents were May and Ted Baines, who lived in Hastings, and my great-grandparents were settlers in Ormondville. They arrived there in 1870 on the Hudson, which is an immigrant ship, arrived in Napier and walked straight to Ormondville. They were supposed to have been assisted immigrants, but they arrived in Ormondville and they had an 800-acre farm there, purchased that, so how they got it, I don't know. In right, Charles Baines was his name. He subdivided the farm. Eight sons got a farm each, and that was in Ormondville. So my great-grandparents were there. My grandfather was born there. My grandmother was born in Ormondville, and that's my heritage, really, is Ormondville. But we actually come from Whittington in Kent when they came from England on the Hudson in 1874, I think it was, yeah. So that's my heritage is English. My mother's side, my mother was a Baxter, and her mother was a Marnie, and her mother was a mystic that travelled the circuses, reading crystal balls, etc., etc. Mum was very superstitious, could read teacups and read palms, so I can still read palms. Came to New Zealand and married my grandfather, Andrew Baxter, from Edinburgh. They're Scottish, so we've got Scottish, Irish, English, you name it, a good mixture. But very proud of my heritage that way. A lot of burials in Ormondville, the cemetery there, there's Baines everywhere, Marshes everywhere, which is my grandmother's maiden name. Grandfather Baines was on the board for Waipawa counties, and he was Grand Master of the Masonic Lodge, I think it was Freemason, something like that. We've got photos of him with all his regalia on, but I'm very proud of my heritage. Mum was completely different to Dad. Mum was brought up in Wellington. She was a Ducks of Wellington College. She taught ballet. She's a writer under the non-diploma Casper to Wellington newspapers, stuff like that. And she shifted from Wellington to Napier, to Richmond, which is Maranui. And Dad was born and bred in Ormondville when a young boy was shepherding, stuff like that, and he loved his motorbikes, which I still do. Complete opposites. Mum and Dad, but they were such a... Never heard one argument, never one squabble, just complete opposite. Mum was so clever, and Dad was just so clever with his hands, but just easygoing, beautiful man, you know, so had a beautiful, beautiful childhood, yeah. Very, very happy. I don't think I ever heard Mum and Dad ever have one squabble, ever. And yet they weren't yes or no people, but they were excellent people, so I was lucky all the way through, yeah. So Mum and Dad shifted from Orville to Hastings, and I live in Mahora, in a state house. I went to Mahora School, Pikihaira, and from there went to Hastings Intermediate when the first opened. I was a foundation pupil there, and I was 12 years old, and I went to high school, and I went to third form. I was in general, but then they select the top five students in the general classes in those forms at Hastings Boys, how it was then, and they put me into professional class. So I went into 4PG, which is a sort of class that was up there, so we thought. But I was very good at art. I could, you know, sketch paintings. So I sold a painting when I was 12, an oil painting. So I'm very good at art. And Mr. Fuller, Jeff Fuller, he actually came round to Mum and Dad, so this boy's got to go overseas to get that. Mum and Dad didn't have the money, so I didn't go. But anyway, I was studying, what would you call it? Not clerical, but office sort of management side, stuff like that. It's got a name now, hasn't it? That side of it. And I was in the fifth form. I'd sat on my exams, did what I had to do and that sort of stuff. And this opportunity to come up to work as an office junior to a parts company, the EW Pigeon Company, which is a New Zealand-wide company. And Mum and Dad, I remember Mum wanted me to keep going. And Dad said, no, here's an opportunity for him to do that. So that's how I got involved with the automotive. Completely different to what I was going to be here. You know, I started at EW Pigeon and Company as office junior in 1958. I was promoted at 23 to branch manager of Napier, youngest branch manager that had there. In 1970, Motor Traders took over the operation, and I was promoted as Hawke's Bay Area Manager. And then Anderson Bevan took over Motor Traders New Zealand Limited, and I was Hawke's Bay Area Manager for Anderson Bevan Limited. In 1983, that company changed to AB Equipment Limited, which is still going, a big corporation in Market Road, Hastings. So I started that branch there in 83, opened the branch there, and I retired in 1997. Got to 55, I said, that's enough for too much pressure. I'd had the two biggest forklift rental operations in New Zealand, based in my area. Made a lot of money and sort of, I don't need work, I'm quite happy. And the company said, you're not going to retire. They spent $30,000 on a farewell do at Normandy Lodge with bands and flowers and paid me for 2 years as a consultant not to go anywhere else, not to go to the opposition. So I was a consultant for 2 years, floating around, done what I did, but I had to sign up not to go to the opposition. But the company were really, really good to me. I had a new Toyota Camry. They gave me that as a sort of plus, you know, bonus and that sort of stuff. So I was very well looked after. But in that period of time when I was there, I was a council member for Institute of Materials Handling, diploma in Jeff Barton Associates for Sales Management, diploma for J.P. Young & Associates for Creative Salesmanship, diploma for Dale Carnegie in Human Relations, diploma in Dale Carnegie Public Speaking, diploma in Xerox for Focused Selection and Interviewing for staff, won a lot of competitions, travelled the world with competitions, went to the Italian Grand Prix, all paid for, trips to Thailand, trips to Japan through Toyota, which is one of the franchises we sold, Toyota Forklifts and Heavy Machinery, all paid for by the company, so it's really well looked after. But 55, that's it, I've had enough, so I mucked around for a little bit doing fishing and fixing up classic motorbikes, and I suppose had to do something. So my niece was working at Birdwood Gallery in Havelock North, art gallery and stuff in Havelock North. She was doing the gardening, and then she said, Uncle Gary, I need a hand. So went out there, and I was mucking around doing what I was fixing, and Louise Stobart, a Zimbabwean lady, runs the whole operation, and they've opened in Parnell, opened in Arrowtown actually now, Birdwood's. She came and said, oh, Gary, can I see you? I said, what for? She said, oh, how about? And I said, not really. I'm too busy fishing and riding motorbikes and drinking beer and chasing women. And anyway, she said, come into the office. Can I see you? So I didn't have a show. I've been there 15 years now. And I work 2 days a week. I'm just part of the crew. I just do what I've got to do, bring a lot of work home, fix antique chairs and tables and a lot of African art. I fix a lot of paintings. I fix a lot of sculptures. I fix a lot of stuff in the gallery, like electronic stuff, old games and bits and pieces. I do them all up and they resell them. So I'm very, love doing, keeps the brain working. So I'm still working, but I retired 25 years ago. Right, that's basically my work history. Sport-wise, I like my sport. Cross-country, stuff like that. I remember I won the junior, intermediate and senior. No, second. That boys high cross-country. There's always one chap, always meet David Beard. Can never win it. It might be 400 boys. Always second, that was David Beard. But I love my long distance running, athletics, and the rifle teams, the Hastings Boys High. And then when I left the start as an officer junior, I joined the Hastings High School Old Boys Rugby Club with all of my mates. Got into that sort of stuff. I was never big enough, but I played Hastings Junior Rep as a second five. Quick enough, but not big enough. I played senior rugby for Hastings High School Old Boys for 4 years, I think. Here again, I enjoyed it, quick but not big. So you get K.R. Tremaine, I was playing Kids Blank. You're right, Sonny. But I enjoyed it and did well, but I was never big enough to go any further. Junior stuff was all right. And then I left when I promoted to Napier, gave up the rugby, and I coached Tararoa under 21s for 8 years, rugby. Had some good teams. We used to go and play rep rugby. And then my son started playing for Tech. And I coached them for a little bit, and then I was patron of the Harmony Rugby Club. I was the only honky in the club, but they are defunct now, but I've sponsored them for a long time. After that, okay, got older, got onto a few old classic motorbikes, and that's been my hobby ever since. I just do up old bikes. I've only got 12 left at the moment, from Indians to Triumphs to Velocets to Sunbeams, really old stuff with a lot of money in the shed. I sold two of them recently, sold a X75 Hurricane for $37,000, a motorbike, and another BSA Gold Star Isle of Man race bike went to a museum in Japan. Kathy, my wife, said, thanks a lot of money and bought our motorhome with two motorbikes that I couldn't start because they're too big for me. I still go about twice a week, still riding bikes. Just don't do the big distances now. We used to go Apatio and stuff like that, riding bikes all the time. I'd take the Indian out all the time. My cob's got that at the moment. Got to pick that up this afternoon, the Indian, 1941 Indian.
So you belong to a motorcycle club?
Allstate Classic Motorcycle Club. I was secretary treasurer there for many years when they first started their club rooms. Now there's 150 members and it's a very, very strong social club here. And that's why Pauline's husband, Morris, rang me about his mobilette. I've got his mobilette in the garage there. That was Morris's old bike. He was in Classics and knew me when he was with Kiwi that I was interested in old bikes, and he said, come and pick up this bike. And that's in my shed now. It's a mobilette. I always say it's a French bike. About 1950, was owned by Bridget Bardot, but it wasn't. We had a bike show there, the showgrounds, just recently, and the TV crew comes around and they interviewed myself with the Indian, and I had the Sunbeam and other stuff. What about this bike? And I thought, that's Bridget Bardot's. And all of a sudden, oh, was it really? I said, well, I say it is. It was French, come from the French River. You don't, could have been.
You did say you've got Irish in you.
Yeah. The Ali Vela set, which is an old cop's bike. I still ride that around. That was interviewed at the show too, so yeah. I'm secretary of the Clive Surf Casting Club, which is just locals. We meet in the Clive Hotel, but we've got our own clubs behind the Clive Hall. Up the top, behind the curtains, is another little room up there, or quite a big room, that looks out over the river. It's all done up, and that belongs to our club. We don't pay any rent, but I do the lawns, that's a rental. So by looking after it, we get free rental there. But it belongs to the community, so what the hang. But I look after and do the lawns for the Clive Surf Casting Club, which I'm still doing. So I go fishing quite a bit, love my fishing, don't catch anything.
So do you have a boat?
No, we go to Waipatika in the motorhome every year, and all my nephews have got a Thundercat, which is a surf rescue boat, which they can get out at any sea at Waipatika. I fish off the beach now, let the young fellas go out because they're in mid-air and smashing around. So we go and use that. We stay there every year for about 3 weeks over Christmas, about 30 of the family, and fish up there. Yeah. We take the motor home, got a tent, and the grandkids come. And
that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I leave them too, and I go fishing on my own in the morning. But it's beautiful, yeah. And the kids, all growing up now, they used to be individuals. Now they want their girlfriends to come with them and the boyfriends to come with them. So we had rows in one of the sections down below. The girls that side, boys that side. Didn't work. But we enjoy it, and the kids are just growing up loving it. It's good for them. So about the 22nd, I think we leave again this year for Waipatika. Booked every year. And then, while I was living in Clive, the Clive Lions, which is now defunct, there's two people there. There was Daryl Gregory and Brian Sands. They were the president so-and-so of the Clive Lions in the area then. And they had the money. They were locals. And they approached me because they knew I loved history and had all the photos. I kept showing these boys photos and stuff like that. What about writing a book? And I said, I'm not really an author. I can't write a book. So they went on and on. They pestered me. And I said, well, I'll have a crack. What do you do? My niece is Gail Broadbent. She's written 5 or 6 books. She works at Modering Books and Hastings Street. Anyway, she helped and got me sort of started what to do. And I mean, it was a bit daunting. Number one, you had to get the money. You had to have sponsors behind you to do that sort of stuff. Number two, you've got to do it properly with history, otherwise you get blown to bits. Number three, they said, you're never going to do it. You're too easy going. So, you know, you've got to be dedicated. And I said, well, I've done everything else I want to do. I'll do that. You're never going to do it. It took me a while, but I got there. But as you'll know, Lynn, with history, a lot of travelling around, interviewing and knocking on doors and interviewing. And then I thought, this is too much for myself. So through Daryl and Brian Sands and Miles Gervin, I drink with Miles on Friday nights. Miles is a local accountant sort of stuff. They set up a trust so Miles can handle the money. And they can handle it, got too big. And two or three others on the trust wrote to different people like Selwyn Cushing, who's Clive Boy and stuff like that. The money came in through them. We had the money there, right? I wanted to get it right through from pre-European. I did about 30 pages of pre-European, which I thought was pretty good. Got vetted by Rose Mohu, and Rose sort of blew that to bits. Where'd that come from? I got all my Maori stuff from Matahi, which is our Marae, and through the Kāmata Zia, Miki Udaki Unahi. She said, no, that's wrong. And I said, well, I got it from my people. And she said, don't listen to them, they're river people. She's from Waimarama. So, anyway, Rose was nice about it. And I wiped the whole lot, I wiped the pre-European section completely. And I'd done all that work, I wiped it.
But so you didn't include it at all in the book?
I did. All the myths and everything, I wiped all that sort of stuff. I did all the pars.
Oh, the basic.
A lot of the stuff I got from Kay Mooney's book. Oh, the Hawke's Bay County Council books, you've seen those? Did all that from the past, a lot of that from just asking around with various people, but the local knowledge now is completely wrong from even Kay Mooney's time, which is 1960 sort of stuff. What she says is different from what people are saying now, so just word of mouth, word of mouth, word of mouth. So I put in there basically from what Kay wrote in her book, or from County Council records, but I wiped all the pre-European myths and stories, unless it's written down, and just forget about it.
It's shame.
Shame, yeah. It was a lot of work to get that too, wow. But a lot of it is now opposed to what, like, Te Reo is trying to say now with Maori language, stuff like that, like Aotearoa, which was never a name Aotearoa pre-European. There were different names in the different islands. They were island people that did not have a name pre-European for Aotearoa. Stuff like that, but you just got to go with the flow, don't you? I think you do. Anyway, I got that sort of stuff, then I started on the very early, so interesting, in Waipariki, which is where East Clive was, where it is, from Barney Roads to arriving there to Joseph Roads, opening it up, subdividing it, and all those paper roads are still there, not built, and they're still there. Collected a lot of old photos, bits and pieces. Anyway, just about ready to do something with it, and I had a presentation at the Clive Landmark. A lady there was running the history site in those days. She said, what about? And I said, I'm not going to do a presentation. Anyway, she said, leave it to us. So they arranged with the photo bits and pieces.
So where is the Clive Library?
No, this is the Hastings Library. Sorry, the Hastings Library. We've got one in Tamwine, we haven't got one in Clive. Yeah, anyway, so I did that presentation and I thought there won't be many there. And it was chock-a-block, you couldn't move. Had to get extra seats and stuff like that. It was done so well, and I did what I did. Anyway, the chap walked up the end of it, and he said, I'm Clive McCurlich, I live in Clive, and my mother started doing the history of Clive. She never finished it, and she's passed away, and I've got collections of this, I've got collections of that. And I was, whoa, done. And I grabbed him, and we're good mates now. He's been all the way through with me, and without his knowledge, it would have been bloody hard, yeah. So Craig McCurlich.
So it was meant to be.
Meant to be. He arrived and heard it's going to be something about Clive, and he said, well, Mum started that. And she got, you know, a long time ago, early photos. She had the whole collection of them, most of them. So I grabbed Craig and went round his place, and he helped me so much, you know. I sort of got the ball rolling. I got the trust going and got what we had to do, etc., arrange for this, arrange for that, arrange, get it published and get it vetted by Judy Sears. I gave her the manuscript, which I'd done, went to her place, and here again, I was hand-done. I'd dictate and my niece would write it down for me, and Judy sort of ripped that to bits. Where did they come from? But here again, she said, you've got to be brutal, you've got to be right, otherwise I'll kill you. So she was brilliant. Judy, we paid her big money to do it. She cut it down from a foot thick to about 2 or 3 inches thick. Just cut it to pieces. Don't need that, don't need that, don't need that. So what's in the book, I've got triple that, the history of Clive, yeah, sitting somewhere. A lot of that I've given to Craig. He's very good at computers, I'm not. He's put it all on computer. Just click a button, and there's all the rows and rows and rows and rows of photos of Clive. Rows and rows and rows of them.
Do you think he might do another book?
No, we've talked about it. I was talking to Craig last week, actually, and I've given him some copies of 4 books of Kay Mooney's Hawke's Bay County Records. Now he wants to do something on the Clive Cenotaph. All those soldiers on there, just about got every single one of them, photos and histories of the men. There's 23 local boys that did not come back on that cenotaph, Clive. From all the wars, mind you, yeah. That's a lot, isn't it, from a little community?
It is.
Anyway, Craig's been invaluable, so we're good mates. He's, no, I don't want to do it. He said, yeah, too much mucking around. Anyway, we did it. We got the money, got Judy to do it. She'd got to be an index. So we got an index. That cost $2,000 just to get an index done. Judy did all that. We just left it to her and kept paying the money out to her. And she did a brilliant job. Judy Sears, we were so rapt to have her. She's written 2 or 3 books, really top books.
So where was it actually published? Was it offshore or in New Zealand?
New Zealand, yeah. We said, right, let's do it. We had the money. We got set on the price. How many want to do with where we're going to sell 500, 1,000, who knows? So, right, got it promoted. We're going to have the book launch. Jimmy Crook is one of the trust members, Jim Crook. He was like a ball of energy. He kept ringing up these people and do this and do that. And he got the papers and the newspaper reports. He promoted it so well. He said, right, we're going to have a book launch in the Clive Rugby Club. I said, oh, yeah, book launch about half a dozen and a dog. And we had it there, and there was that many people at the book launch. There was at least 500. You could not move. And there was that many cars came in the driveway, and people said we drove away, just couldn't get in. The book launch, we had four people behind a desk selling the books. We sold every single one within a fortnight. The ones that weren't pre-booked, we made with the money that had been donated and stuff like that. And the price of the books, we made $37,000, which the trust gave to Clive Rugby Club, the Clive School for the audio visual.
Gone back in the community.
Went to the community, to you name, just the community got the whole lot, so.
And you know that you cannot get a copy of that book for more scarce than hen's teeth.
Yeah, very, very. I still get phone calls for that book. The Hastings Library ordered 20 of them. And I said, 20? I know the lady that did the order, and she said, you watch, you can't get it. And now the books are lost. They pay the fine and get the books. And they've cut them down. There's only a few that are left. That's how they get the books. Can't get them, so that so library.
That's bad, isn't it?
Isn't it? But that's the way to get them, yeah. And books have been on Trade Me, stuff like that for sale. They're $100 for a copy.
And what do you sell them for?
35. Yeah, they're just bang. That's why they went so quickly. Yeah. Families are buying. Give us four, give us three, and we send them to Australia to the kids. And they still come up in the pub. Got any more books? My grandson wants one or something like that. So, no, you're not going to get any more of those. So that's what happened in the book, and I sort of helped out a few other people where I could, ladies like Lynn Sturm and stuff like that, because I appreciate the trouble that happens with writing history, even like Lynn has done. It ain't easy, and sometimes you people from Australia, one or two of the girls that were going backwards and forward to Australia, they come back, they finished that book yet, finished that book yet, and drove me nuts, but you know, now they say, well, congratulations, you did it, yeah. Family didn't think I'd do it, but I did it.
Well, I can now put this on record that thanks to you, Gary, you made it so much easier for me when I did write that book. The day that I came here and spoke to you and you described how you had that big pile of information. Yeah. And so I was aware of that. Yeah. So I didn't have to go through that process myself. Yeah. There was just so much that you told me, the papers passed and everything. It made my job so much easier.
Brilliant.
Do really, really appreciate that.
It was my pleasure, yeah. But I made a lot of new friends through doing what I did. Here again, Craig is a very good comment, you know. Him and his family, sort of, I was always around here, he's around here. It was a real experience, an expedition experience, and you name it, it was amazing.
So are you regarded now as one of the grandfathers of Clive?
I am the hierarchy of the Maori people in Clive. I'm Mr. Baines. Even now, if I go in the pub, all the girls at the back, the Appiatas, Christies, they're all good people. It's always, hello, Mr. Baines, you know, always come up and give you a honky or, hello, Mr. Baines. Even the men, because I looked after them and helped them and that sort of stuff and really appreciate them, give them my respect and, you know, appreciate who they are, what they are, and ask them questions. And now I'm Mr. Baines, all those people out the back, you know, I take my bike and there might be an Indian or a Triumph, something like that, and I might park it out the back and don't touch that bike. That's Mr. Baines' bike. And that's how much respect I had there, yeah. Which is good, isn't it?
That is very good.
Yeah.
The thing that we haven't covered is your own family.
Yeah. Well, I told you about Mum and Dad and my grandparents, my great-grandparents. I was so proud of them. My mother, with her writing, you know, she was an authoress too. And my niece is an authoress.
So therefore, it's got to be in the genes.
My son, Matthew. Matthew's my oldest. Matthew was born in 1966. He was a very clever boy. He was going to play Mirahel too. He ended up just surfing the world, travelled all over the world to Samoa and you name it. Got on well with Matthew, but I'd split up from my first wife, Angela, then, and Matthew sort of blew it from then. He went and lived with his mother, because I was living with my sister down in Clive for 2 years on my own. Didn't want to know a woman or anything like that. And Matt lived with his mum, and he sort of chucked it all in and begged off overseas. He was very clever academically. We've never known him. We got on so well. We're good mates. Anyway, Matt's in Germany, and he worked in Switzerland, Zurich, and then he went to Berlin, and he met this girl over there. He was a single boy. Matt was probably about 27, 28, something like that then, and he met this girl, Rose, who was communist, brought up in East Berlin, and couldn't do much about it. Lovely girl, Rose, interrupted. So they got married, Rose and Matthew. Matthew got crook over in Berlin. He had bladder cancer. Big, strong boy, twice as big as me, but a very nice boy. But Rose worked as a theatre nurse in Berlin, and she, all her mates were doctors in Berlin. He got the best top specialist attention in the world for nothing, more or less, in Berlin. And then right, they got married in the end, Rose and Matt, and they shifted down to Tikkakino, bought a section down and shifted a house on a Tikka. Kathy and I went down and did it all up inside from that. We did all the outside for them, helped them along, and Matt and Rose are still in Tikka and always popping and stuff like that. They're good mates. She had brought up in East Berlin. Her father was a professor. He was captured by the Russians in the Second World War and survived that. Imagine it. He's very lucky, yeah. But because of his knowledge and that, who he was. But Rose was a Griebentrog. But she's a good girl. They got no kids. Matthew couldn't have kids because of his problem. But he's working for Mr. Apple in Tikkakino now. He's a foreman down there. He runs a big complex down there. And Matthew always had a woman chasing after. Matthew did. He's a good boy, yeah. That's Matty there.
He's very smart.
Yeah, he's a lovely kid, yeah. Beauty boy, nice kid. That was Matthew. I spoke to Matt a couple of days ago, actually. He rang me of how you're doing and stuff like that. And he's doing very well, so no problem with Matty. Rebecca, my baby, Rebecca Louise Fleur, my little baby. She's 40-something like that. She had two kids early, very young, Jesse and James. Didn't work out with both partners. So she went back to EIT and studied nursing with two young kids. And we helped her along there, got all the diplomas, stuff like that. Went into Hastings Hospital for a little while there, then went over to Australia. I think she did midwifing for a starter, but now she's in two operations in Toowoomba, two separate hospitals, on call all the time. Just bought a big property outside Toowoomba, a house as big as Ormley Lodge, new Alfa Romeo car. So she's doing very well, my baby. She's always on Facebook all the time to me, and she gets on well with Matt and all the kids get on well with Kathy, not their mother, it's her stepmother. There was Kathy, but I hate these phones and these, they talk to each other on the screens. She can do it from Australia. And I said, I'm not going on that damn thing. When they're coming over, I said, I can't go to Australia now because of COVID. All right. No, Becky's good. Now, my oldest daughter, Susanna Marie, she's my wild one. She's motorbikes, wild parties, and you name it.
Triple field.
She's the wild one. We got on so well together, but she's always been in trouble. She's on her own now. Her oldest son's coming for tea tonight with my great-granddaughter, Michael, Nevada, and the twins. Yeah, so this.
How many grandchildren have you got?
Grandchildren, I've got seven. I've got three great-grandchildren. I've got a 14-year-old great-granddaughter, 14. She comes and works with me at Birdwoods. I take her out there, you know, to fix things and meeting ladies and gallery stuff, which is good for her, isn't it? That age. Yeah.
Excellent.
Louise looks after her, and what are you doing now? And they're all top ladies, they're lovely people, so she feels like school holiday. She rings me, any work? Yeah, come on.
That's great.
Yeah, so that's good for 14-year-old. But Susanna, she never had known with me. She fights with Kathy now and again, both strong-willed. But she's different completely, yeah. Very clever. Here again, an artist. Poetry, and that beautiful poetry. When Mum passed away, she got up and said a eulogy for Mum that she'd written about Ormeville and Nana Claude, she called her, and the button jars. She's a very clever girl, yeah, but just wild, wild kid. She's grown up, she's about 50 or something now, but drained me to drink, that girl.
Still riding bikes, obviously.
No, she's not now. She can't. She's hopeless. Couldn't ride. She's a shocking rider. So she's not allowed to ride now. Lost her licence. Speeding somewhere. She hadn't got a licence. But the Indian, which is my Indian, it's hers when I die. But she won't ride it, she'll have to put it in the shed. That's my Indian there. That's me on Father Christmas on it. It's a beautiful bike, yeah. That's one of the sort of cobbler's place being fixed now. So that's my family and my grandkids and great-grandkids. So they're always hanging around. Yeah, good. Beautiful, man. I'm very lucky, touch wood.
How many years have you lived here in Clive?
When I first got married, I rented a house off Tommy Cooper in Middle Road, Havelock North. It was a farmhouse up in the hills, a small two-bedroom cottage, and he let me have the rental there. But I used to go on the weekend, knotting thistles and that sort of stuff for him while I was working. And weekends I'd do that for him, work for him for no rent. I did it all up, painted it all up. I shipped from there to Ngātahira Road in Bridge Par. And I was about 23 then, I think, just married sort of stuff. No, must have been about 24 then. But I'd been promoted to manage Napier Branch. I had a shift, so I rented a house in Elbourne Street. Then got enough money together to buy another house in Elbourne Street. I was making more money, so I bought a house in Napier Terrace. A big architect designed a house in Napier Terrace. I thought I was Jack the Bear, but a house that didn't make any happier. And right, things happened, split up, and I said I walked out with a suitcase and went with my sister in School Road and Clive, and that was about 41, 42 years ago. Lived with Sue and Clive and got on well with Robbie and Sue and the kids. I worked with Vicky, who's one of the twins that I live with down there, sort of stuff. So we go to Waipariki with the other daughter, so we're very, very close. And I was down there on my own, living there, and I didn't want to know woman and things, so I was busy fixing bikes and doing what I was doing, fishing and that. And Kathy, I employed Kathy a long time ago as a van driver. Her father worked for Firestone. We had tyres and stuff like that. We used to sell tyres. And he said, oh, my daughter wants a job. And I said, all right. Senior, I was looking for a van driver. And Kathy applied for the job. Got it there, and she was working away there. And I was happy married with Angela, and I didn't know, but she was keen on me. But at any rate, she went overseas. She went to New Guinea and Australia, and she'd sort of travel around. She didn't get married or like that. She found out from a sister who lives in Napier that Gary Baines is on his own now. And all of a sudden, I go to these dudes and all my mates and that, and she started hanging around.
Was meant to be.
Where the hell did she come from? And we always got on right and tracked me into marriage, you see.
Hello.
Yeah. And best thing ever happened to me. Couldn't have been happier, eh? It's just fate, isn't it?
Yep. Paths are meant to cross.
How was that meant to be? A father said, oh, what about, you know, an office or junior? And I said, oh, yeah, because Kathy's 12 years younger than me, so I said, oh, yeah. And she never got married. She wanted me and she couldn't get me, so she buggered off and she'd come back and got me. Bloody woman. How did I know what was going on? And thank God, just fate, isn't it?
It is.
It's life, and so it's been a good life, isn't it?
You have had a very good life, Gary, and a very interesting life.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
And I'd like to thank you very, very much for spending this time with us and telling us about your life. Really appreciate it. We wish you all the very best.
Thank you, Lynn.
For the rest of your retirement.